Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. In these unprecedented times, we've decided to do something very precedented. That's right, it's another podcaster asking you to support them. We have now made, 90, getting on for 100 episodes of Monkey Tennis. We barely cover the cost of making it. We do it for the love and not for the cash. But if you have enjoyed what you've heard and you've been listening for some time, please do feel free to go to our Ko-fi page and chuck us the equivalent of a cup of coffee. The website is ko-fi.com/monkeytennis, and every donation will help us to continue subjecting you to our thoughts on the world of Alan Partridge for many years to come. And that address again is ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. Thank you very much in advance for any donations you may throw our way or any you already have. And now on with the episode.
Welcome to Knowing Me, Knowing You. Knowing me, Alan Partridge, knowing you, the audience. I've got a hit on my hands.
Monkey tennis?
Is that good therapy or balmy old cack?
Conrad Knightsox.
Monkey tennis?
I'm Alan Partridge.
Why are you such a prick?
Lots of meaty chat.
Monkey tennis?
I just want you to admit that you hate Les Dennis.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
Monkey tennis?
Okay, I'm in Manhattan. What do I do now?
You are a little shit.
Monkey tennis?
That in England is a whore.
I've taken drugs!
Lord Morgan.
If you speak again, I will physically hit you.
And on that bombshell...
Monkey tennis?
Thank goodness it's radio. I never thought I'd say that.
Hi, gang, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we're weaving our way through Knowing Me, Knowing You, the radio series. We're up to episode 4. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
I just want you to admit that you hate Les Dennis.
Nick Alder.
I'm at the top of my profession. There'd be little argument about that.
And Tom Stab.
We're just one big happy family.
So, episode 4, when did this go out originally?
So this was 22nd December 1992.
And interestingly, this is episode 5 in Every Ruddy Word for some apparent reason.
Yeah, as we've discussed, the order of the episodes in the script book is not the order they broadcast on Radio 4 originally. And even the CD reissues of the series are also not the broadcast order. I think maybe when we come to wrap up the series, we should discuss what we think maybe the actual original order was.
Yeah.
Something to discuss.
They're all over the place.
Yeah.
We find out towards the top of this episode that Alan's published a new book. I think this is the first reference in the APU, both to Pear Tree Publications in this case, and also to the book A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Stadium to Alan Partridge by Alan Partridge. I love that this, I think this is probably included as a bit of a throwaway thing. They didn't know how big Alan would get at this point.
But this book has been referenced in, you know, his bibliography and things like that ever since, which is quite nice.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the first major errors we made in our Monkey Tennis recording career when we'd
gone off basically. One of many.
Because I think we were talking about Alan's book's output, and at the time we kind of forgot to mention this. But we're better, more sought-after broadcasters at this point, so everything's fine.
Interestingly, well, I don't know if it's interesting, but I'll say it anyway.
Doesn't matter.
It really sounds like Alan says ha-ha at the beginning of this episode. Did anyone else spot that?
No. I didn't notice it, but...
Perhaps we can play it in now.
Ha-ha!
Yeah, ha-ha.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, I'd have to agree with you there.
Yep. Yeah. Reviewing the tapes, I think you're right. It's a ha-ha. He's messed up his ha-ha, which is not okay when you consider the hard time he gives all the guests. Who've arguably done a better job than he has.
Yeah, I wonder if that's just a little slip and they just couldn't be bothered to record it because it interrupts the flow. They might have to set everything up again. It's just like, oh, just leave it, it's fine.
There's a growing mound of those little slips as we go through this series, isn't there? He has a George Best story, which gets ruined.
Probably should have told us that, actually.
Yeah, I was on tenterhooks as to where this story was going to go. It really is, edge of your seat stuff.
Anecdotes really aren't his forte, are they?
I'm not sure it even works in reality as a failed joke. I didn't think it was wildly funny.
Well, the bottom line is he dings George Best's car and they swap insurance details, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly that.
It's not a joke. It's not even an interesting anecdote. It's just...
No, but that's the point, isn't it? The joke lies in him spaffing the anecdote because he should have saved the George Best bit till the end.
Yeah.
So the first guest is a member of the royal family, apparently. the Duchess of Stranraer.
Now, I have to say, whenever I even read the word Stranraer, all I can think of is Peter Kay and Phoenix Knight saying Stranraer. So should we throw that clip in now? Because that's always fun to listen to and relive.
whoa. Sweet baby Jesus and the orphans. What the hell's going on? Am I eyes dreaming, Jerry? Or have you got two hard buildings singing
Acapulco?
Can you open it for tonight?
So good.
What opening? There's not going to be an opening. Not with the pissing lighthouse family up there singing instead of grafting. Where's Alan? Well, Leslie?
Stranraer.
Where?
Stranraer.
In Scotland? Today? Stranraer? Oh, my angina. Hey, you want to sing at my funeral, lads? Because it's coming.
Oh,
love that.
Just a lovely bit of comedy crossover for you there.
Stranraer.
Weirdly, in Every Ruddy Word, they've misspelt Stranraer. So it's Stranraugh in Every Ruddy Word.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. Wow. I mean, you can check your one, but in the 2003 one. Yeah.
Another basic error. Yeah. The entry music is Dancing Queen. She's audibly nervous. I guess that's the running joke through this one, is that it's Rebecca Front playing the Duchess of Stranraer.
He says, just to say, it is also incorrect in this version.
Yeah,
okay.
There you go.
And he says to her, you're not like Princess Di. She's very beautiful, but you're more of an outdoor type.
I also quite liked, I did a little bit of Googling about Stranraer, the place, and this show is referenced in the Wikipedia page for Stranraer as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right. I used to live with someone from Stranraer.
Stranraer!
Hi, Ian. So I quite liked Alan's sort of broad opening question. So as a royal, what do you do? It's this thing that you have with Simon and the Child Genius. It's just like, as a child genius, what do you do?
Is this a legitimate question? I mean, would you say you've got a firm grasp on what the role and responsibilities of a member of the royal family is?
I think that there's something in the question in terms of trying to understand what their day-to-day life is like, but when it's boiled down to such a simplistic level, and when he's used that line of questioning before, it's unforgivable.
I think the thing is, in reality, yes, I'd be keen to know what they actually do, but in terms of being a broadcast professional, you definitely wouldn't and shouldn't ask.
No. In fact, you would think he'd have been briefed not to ask, wouldn't
you? It's like you're into your charity work and you've got such and such charity. Tell us about that. Instead of just these open-ended questions and say, what do you do?
I definitely think that there are parallels between Sue Lewis in Knowing Me, Knowing You, the TV show, with how Rebecca Front plays the Duchess of Stranraer.
That's exactly what I was going to say, because I think she's openly very nervous, like Sue Lewis. And I think even like the way Alan describes her, talking about things like saying you're more of an outdoorsy type, is a bit like the kind of Sue Lewis setup as well.
Alan's clearly hoping for a special visit to her place, but there's a bit of a misunderstanding, as he wants to be invited privately, but he's basically being told when it's open to the public, so he can come and pay to have a look around.
Yeah.
And we discover that she has organised an event at the Royal Albert Hall for Refuse, the anti-drugs charity. I check this isn't a real charity, but that's effectively the reason for her, as far as she's concerned, for being on the show.
Is it possible it was a real charity in 1992, though, I guess?
I suppose, yeah, pre-internet days, yeah. That is entirely possible.
I've got a note where Alan says that obviously when they're talking about trying to get in to go and visit the Duchess at her home, Alan says that you're always welcome at Caxton Avenue, and Caxton Avenue spelled in every ruddy word C-A-C-S-T-O-N. That's not how you would spell Caxton. You'd spell it with an X, wouldn't you? So
I had it as an X in my notes.
And so not sure whether that's actually the correct spelling, but I think they've got that wrong. There isn't one.
I think you could... It's a name, isn't it? So yeah. You could spell it in a few different ways.
So this is effectively a new address for Alan that we weren't familiar with before. Not 12 Cecil Road, his childhood home. Not Denton Abbey, but somewhere in between.
So my question was, are we assuming that Caxton Avenue is the house, the mock-up house that Yule is based on? So Alan says, this is my house, my mock-up house. So he probably would have been living in Caxton Avenue at that time. So that's probably a mock-up of Caxton Avenue.
Yeah, that's a safe assumption.
So I've done a little timeline of Alan's abodes, shall we say, throughout. So the Alan's home timeline. Jump in if I've forgotten anything. I've done it to the best of my ability, which isn't necessarily going to be 100% correct. So we've got 12 Cecil Road. East Anglia Polytechnic Halls, Caxton Avenue, the Regent's Park Apartment, the Travel Tavern, the Lamberts for 14 weeks, the Static Home, Classic House, the house in Alpha Papa, which we don't actually know what that is, what the address is or anything, and then Denton Abbey.
Yeah.
Yes.
What happens to the house that he buys in series one of I'm Alan Partridge?
He doesn't buy it, does it?
Well, I guess we never see that either go through or fall.
We don't really see that play out, I don't
think. No, we don't, yeah.
I guess there must be something between being in Polytechnic Halls and being in Caxton Avenue as well, but we just don't know what that would be.
Although, actually, I've noted down East Anglia Polytechnic Halls. He doesn't go to halls, does he? He stays
at
home.
Yeah,
it's just that he, when he's... sitting around with that girl and she's just ignoring him and smoking.
Start bollock naked.
Yeah. That's when he's in the hall. So he doesn't actually stay there. But
so I think there are probably some properties that we don't know about.
Yeah.
I was going to say, is it a Regent's Park flat?
Yes. So in I Partridge, when he gets the gig at the BBC, he immediately goes and, I don't know if I can't remember if he buys or rents a property in Regent's Park.
Yes. So I discovered something the other day, and I kind of wish that we'd known about this when we'd done previous series. So I was listening to an old podcast of John Robbins and Ellis James on Radio X, and they had a regular feature where John would read extracts from Tony Blackburn's autobiography, which is called Poptastic, I believe. Is that right? Poptastic? I think it's called Poptastic. And it's basically, it's all real life Partridge, and it's clearly such a heavy source of inspiration for the Gibbons brothers writing the I Partridge book. And the excerpt that he was reading to that I just happened to be listening to the other week, Tony Blackburn writes about having a Regent's Park flat. So they've obviously lifted direct details like that, because in the kind of APU, it seems really random that he's done that. Because, obviously the joke being about him just living to extravagance, even though he doesn't really have a solid kind of career footing. But they've obviously just taken so many bits from what Tony Blackburn's written. And everything I've read and heard about that book so far is just all pure real-life Partridge. It's so good. I just wish we'd had it as a text to refer to when we'd covered the I Partridge book, for example, because I think it heavily leans upon that. It's really great.
So back to the Duchess. Alan is basically trying to build a bit of rapport, get her out of her shell, but then missteps by trying to get her to admit to getting completely rat-assed. She's so aghast at this that he is then effectively apologising throughout everything she says for the next couple of minutes. And then we discover that there's a personal connection to her support for Refuse, the anti-drugs charity. Her son Clive has a drugs problem. Alan refers to him as Clive the Junkie. Refuse was the charity that helped him, and apparently he smashed up the Cafe Royal, which is a real place.
Yes. Would we say it's actually a rare moment of humility and genuine apology from Alan here as well? Because he starts saying, I'm genuinely sorry about that. I went too far. Normally he's like saying, soz, no, full sorry, and that's the best you'll get.
Is that
because she's royalty, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Cafe Royal is a real place. It's currently a five-star hotel in Piccadilly, but before it was converted into a hotel... probably about 10 years ago or something, it was just a famous kind of high society restaurant and meeting place. It hosted the likes of Oscar Wilde, Winston Churchill, Muhammad Ali and Princess Di.
Lovely. As well as her son Clive, she also has a daughter Alicia, who is described as a maverick by Alan, but I think that just means she's a performance artist.
it means she doesn't really understand what she does,
There's some description of her recent performance. She daubed herself in paint and accompanied by a pop record, which it turns out was Gary Glitter, which is not dated well. 1992. She marched backwards and forwards. It was really very powerful, or to quote Alan, it sounds hilarious.
Yeah, he's just laughing all the way through, isn't he? He thinks it's a joke.
And he's also read in a review of the performance that she was seen simulating defecation on a photo of Winston Churchill.
Yeah, and then he just goes, what's all that about? Again, it's him. He can't engage with anything that people are doing, which isn't supposed to be a level of art. It's just hilarious, or it's wacky, or it's maverick. And that's the only level that he can engage with it.
And he falls into the trap we've seen with other guests already, where basically he tries to find a point of comparison between him and them, and how a way that he might be better. So he says to her, I'm at the top of my profession. There's little argument about that, but you're not at the top of yours. You're 27th in line to the throne. So I did look up who is currently 27th.
So did I.
That falls to Prince Henry, Duke of Gloucester, who's currently 76 years old. Best of luck with that. I also didn't realise until I looked at the lineage that Harry, obviously, recent news events mean that Harry might not be in line for the throne anyway, but Harry is actually comes after all of William's kids in terms of being in line for the throne, which I didn't realise it worked like that. Seems a bit unfair.
So no wonder he's like, don't call me Prince Harry anymore. He doesn't care, does he?
keep having kids. Yeah. I'm off to Canada later.
I actually think that when you said Prince Henry, you meant Prince Richard. Adam, don't people complain here again, not least of all the royal family.
We've made enough mistakes as it is.
Yes, I fact-checked that. You're right. It is Prince Richard, not Prince Henry, who's the Duke of Gloucester, currently 76 years old and with a very slim chance of ever wearing that crown.
He was born in Northampton, like me. Something in common with royalty.
Alan foreshadows Knowing Me, Knowing Yule here by imagining a bomb in a cracker at this point in the show as well. this sort of flight of fancy somehow ends up with him imagining himself as King Alan as well.
There was actually a King Alan. He says the first, but there actually was one before. There was a King Alan of Brittany, or Alan the Great, who died in 907.
Is that British, though, or French?
Brittany.
So no chance.
He doesn't say of Britain, does he? He just says King Alan the first. There was a King Alan.
Okay, fine.
That's the end of the royal section of the episode. Coming up, Dustin Hoffman, Frank Spencer, Michael Caine. We haven't got those people, but it's a very talented young impressionist. And this is quite nice because obviously it's sort of a reference to, I guess, Steve Coogan's career up to this point where he known very well, very much as an impressionist. And obviously that's kind of had a resurgence in The Trip and things like that ever since. This is someone who was booked onto the show, not by Alan, but by his researchers who warned him that this guest was a bit near the knuckle. But Alan says, I'm prepared to take a chance on him. Of course, queuing up the music, take a chance on me. It's Steve Thompson.
Do we all agree that his impressions are rubbish? And is that the joke?
Hang on, whose impressions?
Marber's.
I thought they were good.
No, they're not good.
I thought they were good.
Okay, that's one for yes and one for no.
I think he's supposed to have been brought on as quite an average performer.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not saying that they're cutting edge. I thought they were quite funny. Maybe it's just I enjoyed them.
It's funny, but funny doesn't have to be good.
I confuse funny with good.
Yeah. And also, his impressions, when you do impressions, like you're supposed to do more than, I'm Wogan.
That's the thing, isn't it? Obviously, one of the jokes is, Alan doesn't clock that he's doing a Wogan impression until he actually says, Terry Wogan.
Yeah.
So Steve Thompson clearly is an early relation of Max Beasley and Cheeky Monkey, played by John Thompson in the TV series. As I say, it's interesting knowing that Steve's talent for impressions and he sort of came up through similar channels, you know, maybe, I don't know, was even given a break like this on a show at some point.
Yeah, it's interesting. Coogan himself was on Spitting Image from, I think, 1988 to 1992. So there's definitely a bit of a basis in this that's the world he came from.
There's another nice bit where Alan's sort of missing an obvious cue for any good chat show host, that once you name a famous person, that's basically where you step back and let the impressionist come in and do the impression. But he misses that entirely, and he's sort of naming people but then just carries on talking over the guy. And then it gets into a slightly heated bit where he basically ends up saying, I just want you to admit that you hate Les Dennis.
Before you get to the Les Dennis bit, he's gone through like a list of comedians, because he's trying to lead him into that direction, saying, let's talk about this new alternative comedy thing. What is that? And obviously it's no surprise that Alan as a character doesn't understand the concept of alternative comedy, what it's for, what it's supposed to do. And I wondered, is that actually maybe the writing team having a not so subtle dig at audiences that don't get what they're doing with comedy? Like, so what this team are doing with comedy perhaps as well.
This was the time of alternative comedy breaking through into the mainstream, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, to Alan's mind, it's Frankie Howard, it's The Goodies, it's Monty Python, it's Bernard Manning, it's Jim Davidson, it's Les Dennis.
I did think it was interesting that in 1992, Les Dennis sits in a category with Bernard Manning and Jim Davidson. I would have said they
for different reasons.
Yeah.
But this is a mixed list, because obviously, like, The Goodies and Monty Python definitely shouldn't be on that list at all, because they're ensemble comedy that was quite alternative and cutting edge for their eras as well.
And so, good as well.
Yeah, so that's more just like, is that the list of all the comedians Alan can think of, basically?
I also think Jim Davidson in 1992 was a very different man to what Jim Davidson in 2020 is.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
I think it was more accepted.
Yeah, he was on primetime BBC TV. Yeah, yeah. You have to remember, he was primetime BBC TV.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying his...
As a presenter, yes, but his stand-up was still probably the same, but that's it was more acceptable.
I'm not saying that's
changed. In the lens of 1992, everything was fine.
I would clarify, it wasn't more acceptable, it was more accepted.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
But yes.
Okay, so Alan says, I just want you to admit that you hate Les Dennis. Would you guys like to take a deep dive into the world of Les Dennis?
Les Denis, yes please.
It's time for a quiz.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Right, guys, it's the Les Dennis quiz. This is how it's going to work. I want a group consensus answer. This is true or false. We've got 15 questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
Born ready.
All right.
True.
True. True or false, group consensus, question number one. Les Dennis's real name is Leslie Dennis Heseltine.
Yes, I think that's true.
Yeah, true.
Correct. Question number two. Les Dennis was the host of Family Fortunes for 18 years.
I think that's also true. If it's false, I think it's longer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I think he did it for a long time.
Let's go. That sounds like a long time.
I think it sounds too long, personally. Yeah. I think it's false.
Oh, go with the majority.
False.
It is false.
No.
It was 15 years.
Well done.
Still quite a long time.
Yeah.
Question number three. Whilst at school, Les Dennis had a Saturday job in Burton's.
I mean, perfectly plausible, right?
Yeah, true.
True.
It's true. You guys are on a roll. Question number four. Les Dennis has a daughter called Denise.
Ooh. Oh, it seems like too much of a coincidence.
Yeah, I think false.
It's like Danny Dyer and Danny Dyer. Let's go false.
False.
You're correct. You're nailing this so far. Question number five. In 1996, Les Dennis was the victim of a Noel Edmonds gotcha.
Gotta be true.
Definitely could be true.
Yes, yeah. Well, Edmonds was doing House Party around then, so
It feels a bit neat and convenient. Yeah. I'm leaning towards false.
I think true.
Adam?
I'm going to say true because I want it to be true.
Okay.
So group consensus is true?
True.
Yep.
You're right, you're on a roll. That's 5-5. Question six. In 2006, Les Dennis starred in a musical production of Hamlet.
A musical production of Hamlet starring Les Dennis.
let's break that down.
Yeah.
What I will say is, I was quite surprised the amount of things Les Dennis has done doing the research for this. That's all I am saying.
Well, he's leading us down the path of true, isn't he?
I was going to say false.
It's going to be something like...
You haven't seen the other questions.
Much Ado About Nothing instead.
A musical version of... It's not musical.
I'm going to say false as well.
Yeah, false.
It's false.
Yeah.
Question number 7. In 2012, Les Dennis starred in the musical production of Legally Blonde.
I think
more plausible.
Yeah, much more plausible.
Yeah, let's go true.
Yeah.
It's 7-7.
We know Les Dennis.
In 2017, Les Dennis starred in the musical production of The Addams Family.
Oh, as who though?
Yeah, I mean he again perfectly plausible that he did.
I don't remember a musical Addams Family.
I think I would know. I would notice that. I'm gonna go.
False.
I think I'm gonna go false.
False,
for that.
I think as well. I think false as well.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, you're saying false.
Yeah. Yep.
It is.
I've changed my mind. Yeah.
You're saying false. It is. It's true.
Oh, what? Do you know who he played?
I can tell you. Hang on. I think it was Fester.
Wow. Brilliant.
Yeah, he played Uncle Fester in the musical production of that.
Brilliant.
Question number 9. Les Dennis said his appearance as a fictionalized version of himself in Extras in 2005 was, quote, not one of his wisest moves.
Oh, true. I feel like I've read that interview.
Oh, what, you think he regrets it?
Oh, I actually know, because I heard him do an interview with Richard Herring where he was trying to argue that it was actually very redemptive, and Richard Herring was saying, I think you've made a bit of a tit of yourself.
Cock goes in fanny.
That's Cheggers.
That's Cheggers. Of course, yeah, it is. Yeah. Oh, being an idiot. Yeah,
God rest his soul. I'm going to say
Cheggers dead?
Yes.
Oh, I missed that.
I'm going to say true.
Cheggers.
I'm going to say this is true.
Just to point out, when Keith Chegwin died, we definitely did post about it on the Monkey Tennis socials as well, so I don't know how you missed it. Mm. Okay, sorry. Anyway, what's the group answer?
I don't know now. Tom Stubbs trying to deal with grief in real time. This quiz is
sorry, you're still processing
true,
this.
True.
I think true. I think he said that.
So he said it was not one of his wisest moves.
Yeah, yes.
I can confirm that that is...
Oh.
False. He said it changed his life.
Wow.
Question number 10. Les Dennis said his appearance in Celebrity Big Brother changed his life.
I see what's happened here. I think that's false, and I think he said that Celebrity Big Brother was one of the worst things he's ever done.
Yeah. Yep.
Good shout.
Correct. You've seen what I've done there. Yes. Just a bit of fun.
There we go.
Question number 11. Alongside appearing as himself in Extras, Les Dennis also appeared as himself in Episodes, obviously the sitcom starring friend of the show, Stephen Mangan.
Oh, I don't remember seeing that episode of Episodes, but I haven't seen all of them.
I only watched the first series and I don't remember.
Can you say false?
Let's go
false.
Correct. Question 12. We're nearly there. In 2018, Norwich suffered a spate of graffiti across the city that simply said, Les Dennis. Is that true or false?
I think it will.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Wow.
You're saying true?
Okay, yeah. I'll go true.
It's true. He took to Twitter to deny his responsibility. Question 13.
I love that he felt compelled to do that.
Yeah. Question 13. Les Dennis has appeared in The Bill, Casualty and Holby City. It's the holy trinity of television appearances. Is that true or is it false?
I think it's true.
I'm going to go true as well. As a young lady.
Let's say true.
It's true. Of course he bloody has. Question 14. Les Dennis took part in a walk that was televised by the BBC.
I mean, that doesn't sound like much of a programme. I'm going to say false. I'm going to say true because I think you've thrown it in because it sounds like Nomad, but also the details are vague enough that it's probably true.
Yeah, true.
Okay.
It's true. It was Pilgrimage to Road to Rome, which aired on BBC Two in 2019. And yeah, it's pure real life Partridge, isn't it?
Great.
Final question then, and unfortunately we've not had much of this.
Really great.
Yeah.
In question number 15, in 2019, Les Dennis denied permission for a bar to be named after him in Norwich. Is that true or is it false?
False. What's the connection? Why Norwich?
Well, I don't know, but that's where the graffiti happened as well.
I would lean to false as well, but at this point,
for the record, I think it's true, but let's go false because that's the majority.
Annoyingly, that's correct. It is false, but basically I've just twisted the facts here. It was actually a bar in Brighton that wanted to name themselves after him. He denied their permission, so the bar named itself the Cease and Desist.
So how many did we get right?
I think 14 out of 15, wasn't it?
13 or 14.
I think, yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Wow.
You just had to do that.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't get to use it enough, unfortunately.
Any more?
Nope.
please, please, please do donate that £3.
Yeah.
We need the production budget.
So this gets to, I mean, this guest, the impressionist here, gets to a point where he's basically just performing for Alan's entertainment, regardless of who's listening at home.
Yeah.
And Alan's like, yeah, do the next one. And yeah, he does say, I do voices on Spitting Image at one point, the guest, which obviously, as we've said, Steve did too.
It's kind of like Steve Coogan interviewing himself in an alternative universe. Steve on Steve.
And then it gets even more meta as Alan thinks that Spitting Image are making a puppet of him to feature in future show. But it turns out he's not important enough. No. And then he tries to, he hears that the impressionist does an impression of him. So he's like, please do it.
That's why you're on the show.
Do Alan Partridge.
Just to take it back a step, Alan says, you're talking to a man who's been debagged at a pharmaceutical conference.
Oh, yeah.
So this is, we already know that Alan was debagged in a comic relief sketch. So he's been debagged twice.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that detail. I also thought the bit where he's pushing him in to do the Frank Spencer impression towards the end of this. I wonder if that's maybe what used to happen to Coogan in the early days. People just be pushing him to do things, and that's kind of where this bit of scripting came from.
I think he still does
Come on, do your Frank Spencer.
Come on, do Aha, do it. Yeah. Be a performing monkey.
Yeah. Dance, Colin, dance.
And so when the impression of Alan Partridge kicks off, he refers to Sports Desk, so it kind of ties back into the APU. He describes Alan, he pretends Alan describes himself as the non-thinking man's Elton Wellesby, who was a TV sports presenter at the time. And he also gives the impression that Alan's desperate to be on TV, which of course we know is true. But Alan says to him, now that, Sunshine, is a libelous.
Did you see that quite recently Elton Wellesby was a bit controversial in 2018, To be fair, he was aged 67 at the time. He was branded sexist and out of date by Twitter users after claiming that female commentators are just not good enough. So, I mean, to be fair, that does kind of line up with Alan in the 90s as well.
Yeah, I think he's got him bang to rights here. And then there's a bit here with there's a lot of repetition, which I found was quite drawn out and not particularly great.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ending to this bit isn't particularly great, I don't think.
No, and the impression of him doing an impression of Alan Partridge...
And just copying what he's saying
as
well.
...isn't particularly good or funny. I preferred his Frank Spencer, personally.
I liked at the end of his Alan impression when he's saying, let me on the telly, that's just a nice... that's nicely drawn through from the previous episode where he's saying, I want to be on the telly. So it's a nice cementing of that character aspect.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, with the repetition bit, it's like, there's just not a great payoff to that, is there?
What I did enjoy is that we do get another threat of violence from Alan where he says, I will physically hit you.
At least he gave a warning that time.
Yes. Yeah. But again, there's this through line of violence that crops up again and again where Alan is thinking quite frequently about hitting people.
He has a very bad temper. He did admit that.
Yeah. But simmers down at the end just long enough to say, quick question before you go, Steve. What's the name of the researcher that booked you? Oh dear, that's the end of that.
Oh yeah, call. Is it Lisa? No, it must have been Jason then.
Yeah.
There's also the weird reference at the end when he's like Umberto Eco, and Alan's obviously says, what's Umberto Eco instead of who? Mm. So I had to look this up. I don't know if anybody else was familiar with that.
Same.
I'm pretty sure we covered it at university on the course that we did, Tom.
We weren't in the same class.
We did do the same course though.
Okay, tell me all about it.
Well, I don't remember anymore, but that's not the point. I'm just saying we did cover it at university.
An Italian novelist, literary critic, philosopher, semiotician,
university. Yeah, it's where we did semiotics, I'm sure. You know?
Great. Well, I don't remember.
Oh, well, that was money well spent on those tuition fees. Go on, tell us about Umbro Echo.
I just have.
Umbro?
Oh, okay. Umbro?
Umbro Echo. Umberto Eco.
That was money well spent. Please, if you have a spare second, go to ko-fi.com/monkeytennis and drop us the price of a cup of coffee so these two Berks can go back to university and do a master's in Umberto Echo. So the next guest is a government minister, a junior minister for housing, who started on Norfolk County, County Council, Sandra Peaks, who is here effectively to clear her name.
Yeah, this I would say when you were saying earlier that Simon, the child genius, was your favourite sort of guest. I think this is probably mine.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, I like this one. Mm.
Gimme, Gimme, Gimme is her walk-on music, which turns out to be eerily prescient and inappropriate. basically she's been on holiday with 17-year-old twins and someone snapped some compromising shots
Whoa, there's so much more to cover before we get to this.
Please go ahead.
What I did enjoy is that, so they're obviously both from Norwich, and there is a connection that we find out a bit more between Alan and Sandra a little bit later on in the documentary. But I did enjoy that both from Norwich, and Alan calls it the little island in the bog.
But even before then, I'd really like the detail. He's saying there's no time to clap, there's no time. I think what you see is he often chastises the audience when he's annoyed with what's happened with a guest. So the last interview's gone really badly. The audience are clapping for the next person. He just wants to move on and get it out of the way.
Right, yeah. So the other point I wanted to make with Sandra before we go any further is I think the reason that Alan has got her on the show at this stage, so before we find out what happens in the documentary, is that she has helped clear some gypsies.
Yes.
I think that is something that Alan is obviously happy about.
Yeah, so I think we know that Alan has a long-running hatred of gypsies, but then I think there's also an angle you could take on this that is actually hinting towards a feud with local gypsies, which I think is kind of suggested in, there was an early comic relief when he talks about... he's kind of having an imagined conversation with some travellers when he's saying, this is private property, clear up your stuff, you're not wanted, go to Southend, there's plenty of waste ground there. So it's not a generic thing. I think this is like, he's had a very local dispute with some gypsies, and that's why he dislikes them strongly.
And I think that translates into a general, that does turn into a general dislike of the gypsy community.
Yeah, yeah,
for example,
exactly,
on Alpha Papa, when he's trying to use the rifle on the pier and the damn gypsies have tampered with the sites.
Yeah. Or even in this time when he talks about... what is it, a caravan in a lay-by or a burger van in a lay-by?
Oh, yeah.
It's a recurring theme.
So Alan supported Sandra by shouting through a loudhailer. He doesn't go into much more detail than that.
Yeah.
But presumably he's joined her on a march or gone down there to shout at people living in the caravans.
I mean, he did say also he didn't want to disclose his political affiliations on the show, but that would be inappropriate. But suffice to say, on April 10th, we all breathed a sigh of relief. I think we all know what his political affiliations are without him saying any more, don't we?
So the story with Sandra Peaks is that she has gone on holiday with two boys who have been seen to be putting baby oil on her legs and tummy.
And the headline was?
Twin Peaks.
Ah, probably a reference to her ample bosom, I'd presume.
It was actually just to the fact that her name is Peaks and she was with two twins.
Ah, that'll be it.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Although it does work both ways because it sounds like she does have... a larger bust.
Well, if you have a tawdry mind, yes.
Adam.
My God, so, you're busty. And so here come the two young lads. Craig and Matt Bradley are invited onto the show as something of a, well, I guess not a surprise. She's not surprised. She knew they were coming on, right?
Yes.
But she thought for different purposes than it turns out.
Well, they're coming on to clear her name, right?
Yeah, she thinks that they're there to back up her story.
Yeah, which they initially do.
Yeah. Initially.
And it transpires that her husband Brian has employed some 250 boys in his construction firm in the last 2 months alone. So there's definitely something going on here. And Alan smells, someone here smells deeply of fish, Alan says.
We also learn that Alan, like these two formerly homeless boys, takes hospitality, food and drink home with him at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Clears out the BBC dressing rooms.
Why wouldn't you?
The cracks begin to show in their story immediately, don't they? One of them just keeps repeating, they're just like one big happy family.
Yeah.
The other one grasses her up as having been topless on holiday with them.
That's a great thing. They've clearly been coached, but they've only been given one line, so they've got nothing else to back it up with as
well. Yeah, and it's completely inappropriate, but Alan essentially asks them live on TV if he can buy their story.
Oh, and they immediately throw her under the bus.
Oh, without doubt.
This is actually quite unusual because it's, even though he's doing it in quite an unethical way, this is Alan almost trying to get a kind of journalistic scoop here, which isn't the sort of thing he normally does. I mean, obviously he's trying to dish dirt, but he's also trying to get a proper headline out of it.
But this is the bit in, we'll come to cover it in the documentary, where you can kind of hear Iannucci playing the producer talking to Alan through the earpiece, like, yes, dude, like kind of encouraging
him.
And it's interesting that the producers, Alan says that the producers have said that the boys can have 16K, and then Alan says that he'll top it up with 4K to make it 20K. That's important for the documentary.
Yes.
And we'll cover that in a later episode.
So does that mean, in terms of, in the APU here, that the show have planned that they're going to try and execute this thing, and they've already cleared, yes, we're willing to go up to £16,000 to get this expose out?
I think so, and I think that's why Alan is shushing the audience at the start of this, because he knows that he's got more to get through than everybody thinks.
Very good,
He's prepared this expose.
There's no time.
But the key thing is that Alan has been told the producers will pay £16,000.
Yep. And that's fine.
Tell you what. Yeah.
Until the end of the show.
And so, once they hit that 20 grand sweet spot, the boys start yapping. They're rent boys. They do everything. She dressed them like dogs, metal clanking leads, made them bark. They had to eat dog food. She made her husband drink milk from the shower.
Do you think that's true? Or do you reckon they're just saying the first things that come into
Alan
their head?
Alan asks for physical evidence. And that's when Matt gets his bum out.
Yeah.
They do have physical evidence to show.
Exactly.
And the repetition early on when he's saying that they're just like one big happy family, the way he says that is clearly hiding something. So I think I think some of these revelations are genuine.
I love how much he's relishing the scandal as well. Yeah. He's like, oh, that's awful. Any more?
Yeah.
And like, this is terrible, but I want to hear all about it.
And when Matt gets his bum out, he feels the need to describe it. He goes, it's a normal bum with two cheeks, but welts inflicted by a minister of the crown.
Do we think it scans quite well that they do break immediately as well? Because Alan... At the start of this kind of sting, as it were, Alan just says, it's all a bit too squeaky clean. Come on, lads. Bottom line, I've got a checkbook here. How much to spill the beans? And, you know, it's £16,000 is not enough. So that's when Alan has to dip into his own pocket because he's so desperate to make sure they get the expose. But, you know, it only takes a matter of seconds to be like, yeah, we will give you the dirt as well, which I think is quite funny.
Yeah, I think that they have no allegiance. They're just happy to go with whoever the paymaster is.
£16,000, not enough. 20, yes, please.
You've got a deal.
We're rent boys. There's dog food. It's all very sordid.
Yeah. That's disgusting. Tell me more.
It's another one of those where he ends on that bombshell, but it actually is a proper bombshell, really.
Also, I really enjoyed... So we find out that Sandra walks off and subsequently has resigned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then goes, yes, we broke a woman. We broke her, as if it's a real badge of honour.
Properly celebrating.
He really, really sees it as a badge of honour that he has ensured that a woman has had to resign and has been humiliated and broken on national TV.
If you think about it, it's quite interesting. When this interview starts, he's very much on side with Sandra Peaks. They've kind of got a political affiliation. He supported her, campaigned for her. She's helped potentially remove gypsies from near his land. He'll do anything it takes to get a headline and a story for his show.
No. But I think that this is one to pick up later. But I think there's a reason that you find out in the documentary, which we'll cover in a later show, that might explain why he's doing this.
I think I know where you're going.
Yeah. We'll save it.
Save it.
More of that to come. So I think that brings us to the end of episode 4 of Knowing Me, Knowing You, the radio show. If you've got any thoughts on this episode or the series as a whole, thepartridgepod@gmail.com is our email address. We're at facebook.com/thepartridgepod, Twitter @thepartridgepod, Instagram @monkeytennispod. And the Monkey Tennis hotline is 07923 600 017. Also, if you've enjoyed any of our almost 85, 86 episodes, I think, so far of Monkey Tennis, you can go to ko-fi.com/monkeytennis and shout us a coffee, or if you're feeling very, very generous, a coffee for the whole crew. Even Jed gets one. Well, maybe I'll have two. Thanks so much for listening to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast from all of us here. We'll see you next week. Thanks and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Welcome to Knowing Me, Knowing You. Knowing me, Alan Partridge, knowing you, the audience. I've got a hit on my hands.
Monkey Tennis?
Is that good therapy or balmy old cack?
Conrad Knightsock.
Monkey Tennis?
I'm Alan Partridge.
Why are you such a prick?
Lots of meaty chat.
Monkey Tennis?
I just want you to admit that you hate Les Dennis.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
Monkey Tennis?
Okay, I'm in Manhattan. What do I do now?
You are a little shit.
Monkey Tennis?
That, in England, is a whore.
I've taken drugs!
Lord Morgan?
If you speak again, I will physically hit you.
And on that bombshell,
Monkey Tennis?
Thank goodness it's radio. I never thought I'd say that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.